Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Steph Orm from Emmanuel College in Boston.
And I'm Brian McCauley here at the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping in Sweden, the city of DreamHack. And today our guest is actually from Sweden. We have Philip Hübner, who is, and I'll get your title right now, the Chief Business Development Officer at Challenger Mode, a Swedish company founded in 2014 with the mission to make esports truly accessible for gamers. So, Philip, welcome aboard and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Hey, and thanks for having me. So, I'm as you correctly stated, I'm Philip. I'm the Chief Business Development Officer at Challenger Mode. I've been with the company for around 3 years. I actually come from a very rich history within esports. I've done some freelance work here and there. I've done a lot of work in live streaming as well. I used to work at Twitch for a number of years, and before that, I worked at ESL for a number of years. So it's been sort of a 10-year professional career path now. That's the general gist. I can go obviously into much further detail, but
We'll ask you some questions. I mean, the first question we also ask people is, what is esports? And we're changing this now. What is esports to you?
So I actually tend to avoid the term. I tend to only use the term esports when it comes to the industry as a whole. And I prefer using the term competitive gaming, just because it avoids the whole argument of what is and what isn't an esport, and what can be and can't be classified as one, and is Fortnite an esport or is it not? You know, things like that. I don't like to have that argument. So to
is it an esport, Phil?
No comment. So I classify it all as competitive gaming, and you know, anything can be. Any multiplayer game, not even any multiplayer game, any game can be played competitively, right? If it's not in a head-to-head competition, then you know you have speed running, you have PvE competitions in the way that you see in World of Warcraft with the world first race there. So there's a lot of kind of variations of competitive gaming, and that's why again I avoid the term esports.
Cool. So the main reason we brought you in today is to talk about your work at Challenger Mode. So let's start off, you know, what is Challenger Mode for those of us like myself who are less familiar with it?
Yeah. So Challenger Mode at its foundation is we're a tech company. We're a platform. We consider ourselves the infrastructure of esports, right? So what we're trying to build is essentially infrastructure for all the different stakeholders within the industry. So, that could be tournament organizers, esports teams, that can be players themselves, it can be coaches, you know, anybody that kind of taps into the esports industry as a professional or as somebody who would like to be a professional can use Challenger Mode for their means, right? So we allow organizers of all sizes. Anybody can go into Challenger Mode and create a space, and within these spaces, utilize the technology we've built to easily host competitions. And they can run competitions there. They can engage with their community. They can even set up subscriptions and tickets for these tournaments, things like that, and do so. So, in summary, what I would like. Or what I'd like to say is that we're trying to do for tournaments and for competition within esports what Twitch did to broadcasting. So our goal is to allow anybody from their bedroom to host a competition, a tournament for 50,000 people, right? To host the world championships of a game with thousands of participants from their bedroom.
So I've kind of got a follow-up question, and I'm not sure if I'm going to have to edit this out. But when I first came across Challenger Mode, it was at DreamHack. I mean, it was like, oh, what's Challenger Mode? And it was actually, we organize the tournaments at DreamHack here in Jönköping. We are the platform for a lot of the competitions. Is that still a part of what you do, or are we going to edit this out at the final version?
No, so you don't have to edit this out either. So we, along our journey in building what we've built, so in the last 6 years, right, or 7 years almost now, it was founded in 2014. We made the decision that, you know, we didn't want that distraction of running our own tournaments. And we felt it was a distraction, because if we're supposed to be focusing on the tech, on building the platform, then building an events company and building tournament organization within our company just doesn't make any sense, right? That's a massive distraction, a massive waste of resources, essentially. And sort of the number two is, we've seen a lot of companies in the industry that have done so and kind of then pivoted away from focusing on their tech. And number three, sorry, I was going to make 2 points, but I have 3 points.
That's okay. We'll allow it.
And number three is, because we're aiming to provide this technology and this infrastructure to tournament organizers across the world, right? So the last thing we would want to do is be competitive to those very tournament organizers that we're trying to serve, right? We don't want to take away business from them.
I mean, it is a very ironically competitive environment, all about competition, right? I mean, is this something where a lot of competition is emerging and a lot of similar platforms? I mean, I'm almost overwhelmed by the choice, even in terms of CSGO. You know, you've got Leetify, you got Faceit, you got you guys, you got ESL. I'm sure I'm missing another 17 there, but is this one of the ultimate competitive spaces in the world of tech?
I think one of the things that you keep seeing and keep popping up, and why there's so many companies that are trying to make a business out of competition, is because a lot of people go into esports and they see, oh wow, there's no one that does money games, right? There's no one that does this thing where I can challenge somebody for money and then win some money if I'm better than them. And so the majority of these companies actually go and built something like this with this background of, it's a very, very simple business plan to put together. We take a 10% cut and everybody wins, right? The people are happy. We make money. It's easy money.
It's not easy money, Phil.
That's false.
I'm sure it's not easy. Yeah.
So it's false for a multitude of reasons, right? The technology that's needed to build for this is actually very intricate, right? There's a lot that goes into that type of thing. And then number two is, whenever you've seen platforms like these, and there's been dozens, in my time in esports alone, there's this distinct issue with, if you're playing on a platform where you're playing for money and you're putting in your own money, and you're not somebody who constantly wins, you will stop playing. So you will essentially, there's no user funnel that will ever work, because you will always lose more users than you can gain. Meaning that your user acquisition costs will always be much higher than the potential cut that you could ever take. And you basically have a perpetually shrinking audience, because the bottom 50% of your players will always quit, right? It's kind of the sheep and wolf issue, sort of.
Yeah, no, I mean, it can be demoralizing. I started using Faceit as part of my research, and I go to pieces when I start playing on it, because I'm playing people who are also paying to play, and it just, I'm going, oh my god, if I let these guys down, I'm terrible, but that's me being very bad when there's, but I can understand that aspect from that thing. I feel worse letting people down, because they're paying for the platform and I'm playing like crap, and it feeds in on itself. And I could see how, yeah, if you're paying for something and it's making you feel bad, there's no real products for good. This product will make you feel bad and you'll keep coming back for more.
Exactly. Well,
Here's something. So I have a question about all of this. Sorry, as the American here, because I was like, I don't think we have this, and I think it's a lot of it is tied into our gambling laws. So I just wanted, in Sweden, right, where both of you are housed. So are we talking about, when we talk about people playing for money, it's not like a prize pool from an organization. You're saying like individual players. So it's almost like betting.
So what I'm saying is, so we don't do that kind of thing, right? We don't do this kind of money matching. We don't do this gambling thing. What I'm saying is, yes, essentially there have been this many esports kind of platforms that do this kind of thing with this gambling aspect of, I'm going to challenge you for $10. You're going to pay $10. I pay $10.
Right.
And the winner takes all and the platform takes 10%, right? That's a model that's been replicated dozens of times. Also in the US, there's a company out there doing something like this. And they just, they're not available in all the states, but it does exist.
Yeah.
So that's, and actually we fought for a long time because we were confused with these kinds of platforms. So a lot of people consider it as gambling, even though we never had anything to do with that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So, and anyway, to get back to the point, I guess, of what kind of competition is there? So we actually only see sort of two or three competitors out there that are actually doing what we're doing or doing similar things to what we're doing. And I would say in the US, that's Battlefy, or well, they're based in Canada. And then to some extent, Tournament is doing similar things to us as well. That's really our only competitors. And then there's a lot of competition that you could consider our competition, such as FACEIT or ESEA, but they're doing distinctly different things, right? They're very focused on single games. They're very focused on kind of matchmaking. It's not really about enabling organizers. It's not really about tournaments. It's about the sort of matchmaking experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that's what I've seen a lot of is the matchmaking or very small scale, maybe kind of tournament hosting. So to summarize, so Challenger Mode is helping people host these large scale tournaments. And you also mentioned stakeholders, which I wanted to know more about. So are we talking like, are game publishers involved in this anyway?
Yeah,
or like who are the stakeholders? Because that to me sounds like a novel thing that I haven't really seen before.
Yeah, so we as Challenger Mode, you know, we consider ourselves a B2B2C company, right? So we...
I'll have to teach that now in a class. Thanks for that. Don't come up with stuff like that. Bro, you know, Brian, like, what? It's not a podcast, B2B2C. Can you teach that? And I'll be going, no. here's Phil's email. He'll explain it.
So I'll explain what that means, right? It means business to consumer, right? So that means we as a company, and what Victor does, whom we talked about in the pre-chat here, as one of our partnerships managers, is we reach out to partners who are brands, who are tournament organizers, who are esports teams, who might be influencers. So people that will want to use our service to run competitions for their audience. So that's one part of the business. And the other part of the business on the other end, we're working actively on engaging with more game developers and publishers, you know, adding more and more games to our service for automation. Because a part of what Challenger Mode does, or a big part of what we do, is we completely automate the tournament experience so that you don't need any administrators to host a tournament. Mm. And that happens because we work with the game developers on building solutions based on APIs that allow us to automatically host these tournaments. So a large part of what we do is that portion of game developer relationships.
Very cool.
I mean, Victor, before you start working with you, I was down in Phoenix Blue down here in Jönköping, which is an organization that's mainly about Smash Brothers and bringing people. He would have been using your technology to host that tournament, right? That's what he
exactly.
was. Exactly. Yeah, now I get it. And it was really cool. Obviously, I lost, except when I beat Victor, which is on the record on the podcast now, in our Bowser versus Bowser face-off. And then he beat me immediately afterwards. Okay, he's a better Smash. I just happened to win one for once. But yeah, that was challenger mode. And so I've been in this live environment where your technology was helping people come together around us. It was really cool, like, and really friendly, and a big part of people's Sunday or Saturday and or Wednesday as well. And it was awesome. And to see, I mean, this is pre-COVID, back when people could do this. it's like we're in the apocalypse, isn't it? You know, remember the days when you could go down and touch people with their permission.
Sounded weird, Brian.
Well, you know, you're high-fiving them after they kick your ass at Smash right. Brothers. That's what I mean.
Right.
But I've seen it in action in that really cool live way. Tell us about the last horrible year, which probably might not have been so horrible for Challenger mode, potentially.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, for us, it was definitely business-wise, it was a good year. You know, personally, and for everybody, it's obviously awful. You know, and there was a lot of getting used to kind of working remotely, working from home. You know, at this point, we're kind of back at the office because Stockholm is Stockholm and Sweden is Sweden, and nobody here cares about anything.
Right? We'll just pass on this one. Like, yeah, we'll move on in this one.
No, I mean, obviously online competition and online gaming is massively on the rise during Corona, right? And I think one of the big things too is you can see this with games like, I just had a conversation around this today or yesterday. You can see this with games like Among Us and Rust becoming as big as they are because they're social experiences more than anything else, right? Mm-hmm. It's people are missing just going out and hanging out with their friends, right? So all these games that are allowing people to do exactly that, to just hang out with your friends rather than maybe be a super competitive experience where you're not socializing so much, those are also on the rise. Anything online gaming has obviously grown by a huge percentage, and so have we, right? So there's a lot of interest that's come during those days, especially during the early days. We had a lot of sports organizations, sports clubs reach out to us, you know, the football clubs or soccer for the Americans. They've started reaching out to us. Sorry.
No. I've said this before, even on this podcaster. I love it. Yeah, it's football. No, it's not.
It's time to game. It's fine.
They've started reaching out to us, and they're like, "Hey, we need to engage with our audience somehow. We need to do something. We're like, our business is content, and we don't have any content to show because we're not allowed in the stadiums. We can't play our matches. We can't do anything, right?" So, I think there's been a lot of things that have been accelerated, and we have definitely benefited from that, right? And that acceleration has especially been seen in sports simulations and also in game publishers and even big tournament organizers that have taken to digitalizing and kind of moving a lot more competitions online or expanding their offerings with online offerings that they, you know, kind of had in their back of their minds for a long time, but never really executed on. So, from that perspective, it was definitely a good year. And obviously, we also, we ended the year with a $12 million investment round into the company, right? So, which was a huge deal and obviously also very difficult in the times of COVID, because a lot of investors are kind of holding on to their money
And you couldn't go out to celebrate either. All right, lads, $12 million,
yeah, exactly.
Come on. We're going to Las Vegas for the weekend. Right? Your finest champagne, please. No, let's just have a game of CSGO and, you know, drink cheap beer from the off license. I mean, esports is, that's the whole thing about COVID. It's also good for esports researchers, right? Because one of our challenges is we go, oh, we'd like some European money to research this huge thing, and they're going, that's just Pac-Man, and you're going, no, it's you know, I'm ranked 250,000 in Sweden on Faceit. That's right. There's apparently 250,000 people out of 10 million people in Sweden actually on that platform and actually better than me at CSGO. So there's my lowest point at CSGO for till now. But you know, that's the thing. It's such a huge thing. And you have these numbers, you're going like 600 million people. You know, and there was a paper, 25 billion. We had Seth Jenny talking about that. And for us, it's really hard to cut through that. You're researching your little games, aren't you? And you can turn the world. You know, it's more pervasive than anything, and at least now with COVID, and we can go, here's the growth statistics, here's the valuation. It was immune to thing. It's showing innovations that are being adopted elsewhere. So in terms of justifying trying to get funding or why we're researching what we're researching, it's been a good year for us in a way, because it's almost validated everything we've been desperately trying to tell people. It's great. It's not just Pac-Man. I mean, it's like this is one part of your business, right? The thing. There's other components of what you do as well. And one of them I was looking at was the marketplace. What is the marketplace on Challenger Mode?
Yeah, I mean, so the marketplace is kind of a natural evolution of Challenger Mode. You know, it was never a part of our plan. It was never something that we were like, oh yeah, this is something that we're gonna build in the future. It was kind of, you know, we realized that if you play in a competition and you lose, you probably want to improve, right? And we have a lot of players on the platform, and we have a lot of them that are very good at their games, right? We have a lot of, there's a lot of national leagues, there's a lot of professional or semi-professional players on Challenger Mode that, you know, you could probably learn something from. Even you could learn from them, Brian.
I've decided today I'm going to sign up to have someone analyze my thing. I've had a few friends who are coaches or former professional CSGO players say, yeah, you're doing this project, I'll analyze your game for you. And then I go, yeah, but you'd be a bit too honest. I think I'll start with someone I'm paying to criticize me. As does that make sense? So I want to get someone to look at my game. Is that's possible on your platform, right? To someone to look at one of my games.
Yeah. And so we don't facilitate any of that, right? We don't hire these guys or anything. We're a platform, right? And that essentially means there's providers and there's people that buy what these providers are providing, right? So anybody can go in and make a listing. Create a listing on the marketplace that they, you know, want to offer coaching services. There's also graphics and design. There's commentary. You know, you can actually go and hire a commentator for your weekend tournament for very cheap, right? Because obviously these aren't the top level commentators that host your world championships, right? Part of that for us was we want Challenger Mode to be this. This kind of all-in-one platform that if you want to host an esports tournament, you can come into Challenger Mode. You can find somebody who does your graphics for you. You can find somebody who commentates your tournament for you. You can maybe even in the future find somebody who admins that tournament for you, right? Who's a head admin. And that's something we're working on that I can't share too much on at the moment. From a player's perspective, the same thing, right? We want a player to be able to come into Challenger Mode and find all these great competitions, be able to play for fun, for money, or for the purpose of becoming the best player in Sweden, right? In the Nordics or in the world, and kind of be taken through every step of that way, through coaching, through playing in tournaments and so on.
That's so cool. So it's like a one-stop shop for tournament hosting, or again, different player needs, kind of exactly, all under one roof. Yeah. That's super cool. Like, cause I think there's so much part too that it, like, you know, of it as a tournament organizer, you may not even realize that you need, like, oh, I have to hire a commentator or get someone to do that. Right. I like that. That's great.
That's good to hear. So a big part of what we want to do is obviously to show that value to new game developers too, right? Because there obviously is a lot of value in what if you have a new game that you want that you're convinced as a game developer has potential as an esport, if we're going to use that term, right? You want your game to be something that people watch, that people play in big tournaments and on stages. Then all you need to do is integrate with Challenger Mode and everything's there, right? The whole ecosystem is there. You have tournament organizers that can use that tech. You have players that are going to check out your game and play the game. And it's all super easy to use for everybody involved, right? That's the grand vision, essentially.
I mean, myself and Steph are kind of supposed to be working with someone on their game. Remember, Steph, the space shooter game, pretty awesome. We have to get back to that. And it's like Star Wars, like there's 100 ships flying through space. It's really cool. I just haven't had time to actually play with the designer. So if he wanted to kind of leverage this esport aspect of his game, who would he just naturally go to Challenger Mode, or would he have to talk to someone?
We actually have a developer portal, a game developer portal where you can go in. It's not just for game developers. We also have some API documentation for other developers there. But you can go in, you can apply for API access, and you can apply to integrate your game as a game developer too. And then on the game developer's end, all they need to do is essentially provide certain API calls that allow us to automate their game. That's it, right? And that's generally being able to, you know, let our platform create matches, let our platform create the servers that you need to play on and get the results from those matches afterward.
And of course, if it's HunterNet, by the way, is the name of the game. I've remembered HunterNet just as, but if you're able to make a game, you're able to navigate that. Cause I could imagine me having a game going, Phil, can you help me? Phil, Phil, Brian, we don't want you on. No, you're useless. Like, but you know, they're able to kind of handle developing a game. They can obviously, Challenger Mode is not a challenge, pardon the pun. Mm. I mean that's really cool, because one of the things I do a little bit of research with game developers, and it's my other side gig in research is something I like, is that this creative pursuit by indie game developers and stuff. And I'm always, I have a lot of friends who work in the industry, and they never think in terms of developing esports, because it seems like such a closed shop. That it's always like, oh, no, we're going for the one player, we're going for the RPG. That no one's ever gone, well, I know one guy, and we'll have him on the podcast, Sean in Ireland. He's developing a MOBA. And, you know, that's, it's hard for people to cut through with new games that can be esports. Is that something that you see Challenger Mode being able to help with as part of your mission?
So that's something that we hope to do, right? I think Steph might have a different view on this, because in America, there's kind of slightly different games that are popular, especially at an esports level. But here in Europe, for instance, if you look at all the games that have become big esports titles across the years, right, across the last 20 years, the only game that actually came from a AAA studio was Quake, right? And all the other games actually came from being mods, or were actually indie titles that just got very big. I mean, Riot Games was not a AAA studio. League of Legends was not a AAA game when it came out, not at all. Right? It was a super small studio, and so we have this big belief in, you know, usually the community knows what the community wants, and people that are deeply ingrained within esports, within competitive games, they're the ones that will build the next big esports title. And so one of the really, really important aspects for us is empowering indie developers and empowering, you know, the next League of Legends to become a thing.
I mean, I'd love to, you know, with HunterNet, I'm actually going to see get engaged. I'm so bad. I'm even worse than I am at other games with the space battle games. But I'm good at some games, okay? But I'm old. So I'd love to be part of an emerging scene. I mean, there must be something magical about that. Even, you know, you look at pictures from DreamHack in 1994, and they don't have pictures from 92 or 93. Thomas gave me, I said, do you have one from the very first one? No, but it's all about the sense of community. And I think that with the emergent esports titles, there's like Among Us, it's that was out for 2 years before COVID hit and it took off. Do you play Among Us at the office?
There's some people who do, but I personally don't. No, I'm a very I personally game for relaxation nowadays. So I play games like Diablo 2 and Path of Exile. I'm more of a you know.
No, that's what I was all along until I started. COVID hit and I had a computer capable of playing CS:GO, and I can see that I'm actually looking forward to getting the PlayStation 5 and spending some time not being stressed, not being social, not being competitive, and just going, I'm in this world, I have superpowers, I will save the day. And then the second time you play through, you're evil, you know, the way you do games, depending on the type of person you are. And so, yeah, so that's when you work in games sometimes, I can, and competitive games, we won't say esports, as per your original definition, but it's like a busman's holiday, they used to call it. Do you ever hear that expression? So they used to say a bus driver's holiday, because he goes on vacation, he's on a bus again. So when you're working in esports so much, and then you're engaging in esports, it must sometimes be a little too much esports.
Yeah, you know, it definitely can be. I think everybody who's worked in esports for a number of years, let's just use the number 5, because 5 is a good number of years to have worked in any industry, right? They will probably have found themselves not having watched a single esports event for a 6-month stretch at some point in their career, right? Just because it's just too much, right? If it's your job, you engage with it every day. You know, you need some time away from it too. So, you know, I'm definitely that way. I don't actually remember the last esports event I watched. I think it was maybe the Valorant First Strike event, sometime late last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Valorant's the next one I'm going to retry again. So I'm going to ask you a very controversial question here, and you might want to answer this, but I hope you do. Who's the best at esports in the office?
In our office, I would say it depends on what game, right?
No, Phil, you got to answer this. You got to give me an answer that's going to get you in trouble tomorrow.
So it's probably Robin. So Robin is the guy who's very multifaceted. So he's going to be very good at a lot of games. I think that's my answer.
Okay. I mean, does the office ever come together in tournaments? You know, like, because I struggle to get the ERN together to play games because people are so busy, or they have kids, or some people, like, what, there's so many esports, for example.
We're also in like 10 different time zones.
even scheduling this podcast is annoying because Steph's in some made up time zone that didn't exist 300 years ago. There was no sense of time there. Nobody cared. They just lived free. And we had time. So, you know, they've messed up time. But so, you've messed up a lot of stuff.
I was going to say, we messed up everything, please. Yeah. It's fine.
What game would you play to have the whole challenger mode come together in a tournament if you had to pick one?
So actually, to answer your first part of that question, just yesterday, the team, 5 of our guys played in something called the Out of Office League against Big, actually. The esports team, Big, they didn't play against their actual players, right? They played against the management, obviously. Sure. I think they won, though. So nice. So we do play a lot of CS:GO, and we do play in a lot of Valorant competitions too. We've done a lot of corporate games there, and corporate leagues. And I think that is also my answer. I think CS:GO or Valorant is probably where we'd be best. And I think, like you said before, you know, Sweden's the country of CS:GO, and so everybody at our office is a really solid CS:GO player, right? It's just
that's why I'm starting.
If you're Swedish, you're good at CS.
I mean, you said the corporate leagues. Well, I'm not Swedish. I live in Sweden, so that's okay. I'm not letting the side down. I'm propping them all up on faces. So you mentioned the corporate leagues there. Is that something you've seen become really huge over the last while? Because I know Aditro Logistics here have an esports room and have a gamification project, but they built an esports room first as part of that project. It's really cool. I was so jealous. Tell us about the corporate leagues here in Sweden and maybe what you know about that whole scene.
I think the reason that there's a lot of corporate leagues nowadays is because, there's more big companies that are kind of accepting gaming as something that's okay. And that's a team building exercise, right? So it can actually be sold at a corporate level and an executive level as a team building exercise. And I think that's part number one. And then number two, I think a lot of corporate leagues you'll find are actually hosted by sort of marketing agencies and similar. And they're just a very good way to bring a lot of brands and a lot of companies that you might have partnerships with or that you want to work with and things like that together into one place. So I think there's often a practical reason behind running a corporate league. It's not usually just for fun.
Okay, I have one more question. Steph works a lot with the collegiate scene in the US, right, Steph?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, how would you describe that to Phil if you had to describe it shortly to him? Well, I feel Steph will describe to you because I want to hear your thoughts on the Swedish scene after this.
Yeah. I mean, the collegiate scene here is really wild. I would say really for most intents and purposes started maybe 6-7 years ago, but within the last 4 or 5 has like just snowballed and grown exponentially. And it's happening. I have a lot of thoughts on it, but in some ways too quickly in a lot of places. And now it's trickling down to the high school level as well. And so we've got everything from like clubs to immediately rolling out organizations into like varsity esports. Primarily it's been concentrated in the East Coast, specifically the Northeast where I'm at, which is interesting. And a little bit out west in like California and a few places kind of throughout the Midwest. But I think it's really interesting the rate at which it's growing. And I think the second thing is, you know, given the US's close ties with traditional athletic programs, you know, at many universities, it's been interesting to see the growth of esports programs happening. The other thing is like, it's just so different. Like no school does it the same, it seems like, right? So it's been this crazy frenetic, like almost race, you know, to see who can do it first and the best, but no one's doing it the same ways. And I don't know. It's kind of a mess, to be honest. I don't know what Brian was thinking for me to say, but it's just moving so fast and so crazily.
Yeah, I actually am pretty familiar with the collegiate space or the scholastic space in general in the U.S. And you know, obviously there's some crazy stuff happening out there, especially with platforms like PlayVS or companies like PlayVS,
right?
That are taking in a boatload of money. I'm trying not to curse here.
Well, you can say shitload. We've decided you can say
shit. Yeah, we decided an hour ago.
The foreigners say it in their second language, so I'm allowed to say it too.
All right, so it's a shitload of money. It's, you know, the last investment round there was $90 million or something. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I don't want to slander anybody either, but I think the problem is that there's a lot of focus on profit and profitability there with a lot of the actors within that space, especially in the US, because they see the numbers. They're like, oh wow, there's like 20 million students in the US, and there's all these other programs that are charging, you know, Little League Baseball and all that stuff that are charging $150 per kid per year. So if we can monetize these 20 million students, that's more money than anybody in esports is making. And so I think there's a very wrong focus when it comes to scholastic esports. There's a very there's a few very, very good examples that we're also directly supporting, like NACEF and NACE as well, that we're working with pretty closely, where the focus really is not monetization. The focus is just on making people play and also teaching people about esports and the other career paths within esports, right? Not just the athletic path. So I think like you said, it's a bit of a mess in the US, and I think it's gonna be figured out. I just think it's important to step away from that view on profitability and focus more on what is actually best for the students. Yeah. And then secondarily, what is best for esports, right? What is actually going to bring those students into the esports industry as either, you know, interested customers, sure, but mm-hmm. also as people that actually work within the industry and take part in the industry afterwards.
Yeah.
And to get back to Brian's question, how does this look in Sweden? I think generally in Europe, there's this problem that maybe outside of the UK, there isn't much of this, I guess, university and college pride. You know, you're not proud of which university you go to. You don't care. It's like, as long as it's a good university, you don't even care about the name. You don't care about who goes there. It's irrelevant. Most people choose universities by which cities they're in just because it's a nicer city, right? Like that's the European way, I would say. There's very few exceptions, maybe here in Sweden and in a few other places. But so I think because that is lacking, there's no sort of want to represent your university in a sport, right? There's it doesn't really matter. So that I think is one of the biggest challenges that collegiate esports has seen in Europe. And that's why there's less of an interest there. But there is still a big interest from the sort of player side just to engage in something, right? People just want to play in something. And so I think the aspect that does work for collegiate esports is the aspect of, I'm going to misuse this word now, I'm going to call it localization. It's kind of honing in on, I'm playing within this circle of people and I'm the best within this circle of people, right? You might not be the best player in the world, but at least you can be the best player at your university and maybe even.
I'm going to have to localize to this office. I'm the best player in this office.
Exactly. So, and that exactly is what matters, right? If you can be the best person, the best player in your circle of friends, that already matters, right? It's all sure. Esports competition in general is all about, it's about reputation, right? In the end. So,
okay, now I have another question after this about over 40s leagues, because that's where I'm going to have to start playing soon. And maybe then, they accidentally put me in the octogenarian section and I was the best in the nursing home.
Well, you know what? I have bad news for you because there are some pro players that have retired that are in their 40s by now. So you
might, I know.
You might not be.
I met Heaton once and he's in way better shape than me as well. So he's... You know, but like, so do you think there's an opportunity there for us to develop the college scene here in our communist socialist patterns, as half of, you know, Steph's country would judge us for being, with our healthcare and free education?
No.
I think so. Right. I definitely think there's something there. I think the biggest problem is there's no funding. And if there's no funding, you can't put on any events it loses a lot of its attractiveness, right? If you're not able to put on an event that people qualify to, then what am I playing for, right? You always need to give people something to play for regardless. So I definitely think that, you know, the way that we do it in socialist Europe, right? There's usually a lot of government funding that goes towards these types of projects.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's enough funding going towards this at the moment, especially because in a lot of countries, it's still maybe not even seen as something that should be culturally supported by this funding. Here in Sweden, I think, Brian, you maybe know more about that than me. In Germany, where I'm from, for instance, there's still a lot of discussion going on, but there's no actual money flowing yet into supporting it.
You have esports as a sport in Germany. We had, I helped with the application from one of the associations here recently. And then somebody else swooped in and applied at the same time, which means two associations did the application for esports as a sport. You might have heard about this. and I'm not going to name any names or which one I helped, but obviously they're the good guys. And, you know, Sweden is all about let's get along, let's be peaceful, no conflict. And when there's two associations applying at once, that immediately creates conflict, and anyone judging is going to go, uh-oh, no, this is Sweden. No conflict allowed. I can't do a Swedish accent. But so, you know, there's issues there. So I've got one more question. And Steph, do you want to ask any final questions before I ask this or anything?
I feel like we've touched on so many topics. And I Brian, you kind of asked the question I was thinking about, which was like, you know, is there prospects for building that kind of collegiate scene in Sweden? Which I think is interesting. So no, I feel like you already kind of touched on my big issue, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to probably have to talk to Phil about that afterwards or another day because it's late now.
Yeah, no, that's I mean, it's definitely worth talking about more, I think.
The last question I have is like, it's leveraged from that collegiate scene question. When I see it as a, for us, a Nordic region thing. Like, you know, you say there's not university pride, but you know, there is where I go to university or where I'm from pride. And when I see a collegiate scene, I see, you know, the Danes, the Norwegians, the Swedes, and the Finnish. And by the way, for anyone who doesn't know, the Swedes are right in the middle location-wise, and the other three countries all make jokes about the Swedes, and the Swedes make jokes about the other three countries, and Swedes are seen as the big, you know, they're the America, and everyone else is Canada or Mexico and stuff, in a sense. It's really confusing, but they all make fun. They all make fun of each other. It's beautiful. It's like they all say, oh, the Danes speak funny and the Danes tell me something about the Swedes. And I'm just laughing away going, this is brilliant. It's just like England, Ireland, Wales and Scotland or any other region. Like,
right,
and,
right.
Could that work? What about like if we had Swedish representatives and Norwegian representatives and Finnish and, you know, even maybe little old Iceland could tag along, a family of people as a team.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think this is a concept that everybody's familiar with and everybody wants to do, not just with universities, but generally, right? It's always like this. What if, you know, we had qualifiers for Poland or an event in Poland, and then the Polish champion actually goes up against the other European champions, right? And it's just, I think the problem with it is that it's such a huge undertaking that it just never comes to fruition, right? So I think going back to the question of funding, right? Money talks in the end, right? Money allows you to do a lot of things, especially if they're big undertakings. And I think if you're able to spend some money on ramping these things up, because multiple governments suddenly start and decide, okay, we can fund esports, we can fund some of these collegiate esports activities because we think it's culturally valuable, right? Then it becomes much more feasible, I think.
Yeah, well, just, you know, this is what I have for Counter-Strike. It's the Smurf, and he's Swedish, which speaks to the traditions here. So I think, you know, a CSGO tournament in Scandinavia, and obviously League of Legends, but those big, or Dota, because there's a lot of Dota fans here because they're superior to League of Legends.
Very true.
They all say it. They're like people who play PCs over consoles. We're the Dota master race. Anyway, I don't understand any of that, but CSGO. Anyway, thanks, Phil, for giving us your time. This will be out on audio and video, and there'll be any links that Philip wants us to share underneath the video or the audio file. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great. I think there's a lot of topics we could probably talked about for an extra half hour. Mm-hmm.